Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, April 24th, 2026. We turn first to page one, where the main story is about sports at Illinois Wesleyan, titled Flag Football Flying at IWU, Women's Team Finding Its Footing in Inaugural Season. This story is Dateline Bloomington. On a practice field at Illinois Wesleyan University, something new is taking shape. There are no banners, no alumni legacy, no established culture. Instead, in its inaugural season, IWU Women's Flag Football Program is being built from the ground up by first-year players, a new coaching staff, and a vision that extends beyond the field. For freshmen like Lily Greenfield and Emma Caniglia, joining the program meant stepping into the unknown. "It's not easy," Greenfield said. "You're figuring out school, meeting new people, and at the same time building a team culture from scratch, but it's been really fun." Because nearly the entire roster is made up of freshmen, leadership is not inherited, it's developed in real time. "We all had to step up," said Caniglia, the team's quarterback. "Everyone had to take on a leadership role. At first, it was an adjustment, but now it feels like home." That shared experience has accelerated the team's growth, both on and off the field, their coaches said. At the center of the program is head coach Melissa Valenzuela, whose background reflects the growth of flag football as a sport. She was hired in December 2024, bringing more than a decade of experience in both flag and tackle football. Before arriving at Wesleyan, she coached flag football at the high school level in Portland and worked as a defensive backs coach with the Oregon Ravens of the Women's National Football Conference. Valenzuela has also coached youth, co-ed adult, and women's semi-contact flag football teams since 2011, and she helped grow the sport in the Pacific Northwest, including co-creating one of the first five-on-five women's flag leagues in Seattle. Though for Valenzuela, the job is about more than experience, it's about impact. "I wanted to find good humans," she said, "players who are motivated and coachable, because with a new sport, development is going to come with time." The timing of Wesleyan's program aligns with the national surge in interest. Flag football is now an emerging sport for women in the NCAA and is set to debut in the 2028 Summer Olympics. High schools across Illinois, including in Bloomington District 87 and McLean County Unit 5, are beginning to add it to their athletic programs, creating a pipeline that did not exist even a few years ago. For Illinois Wesleyan Athletic Director Mike Wagner, that growth made the decision to launch a flag football program even clearer. "It's about giving women the opportunity to compete, earn a degree, and grow as people," Wagner said. "But we also want to build something that can compete at a high level." Still, building a program from scratch comes with its challenges. "Everything is first right now," he said. "There are going to be bumps, but that is part of building something new." Valenzuela's philosophy emphasizes culture before results. Her team volunteers in the community, helping introduce younger athletes to the sport while reinforcing a sense of purpose. "This isn't just about playing," she said. "It's about giving back and growing the game." That mindset has translated into a close-knit locker room. "If someone's having a tough day, we pick each other up," Greenfield said. For a group of players who barely knew each other months ago, the bond came quickly. "At first, we were all competing for sports," Caniglia said. "But once we started playing together, we really came together." Because flag football is still emerging, many players did not grow up playing or specializing in it. Caniglia played volleyball, softball, and basketball in high school, serving as a team captain in multiple sports. That experience now shapes her roles as a quarterback. I learned how to lead and communicate, she said. That's huge when you're running the offense. Greenfield began playing flag football in her senior year of high school, but even with a late start, she said players should not be afraid to try something new. You don't have to start when you're really young, she said. If you work hard and believe in yourself, you can do it. On the field, development is constant. Practices include early morning weightlifting, near daily training sessions, and film study, but just as important is adaptability. I challenge them, Valenzuela said. Sometimes you don't know your strengths until someone pushed you, and life does not always go as planned. You have to learn how to respond. For players like Canelia, the preparation is as much mental as physical. I like being around my teammates before games, she said. It helps me stay relaxed and not overthink. With no past to define them, Wesleyan players are shaping the future of the program and the sport itself. It's surreal, Canelia said. The sport is growing so fast, and to be part of it is really special. Greenfield sees that growth as something bigger than wins and losses. Younger girls are going to have opportunities that we did not have, she said. For Luenzuela, the long-term goals are not just championships. This sport changed my life, she said. If I can help even one player take something meaningful from it, then I have done my job. Wagner shares that perspective. If we can leave this program and this world better than we found it, then we've done what we are supposed to do, he said. And for players like Canelia, the legacy is already taking shape. I want to be remembered as someone who worked hard and supported my teammates, she said, and someone who helped open the door for others. The Titans will close out their inaugural season this weekend with a doubleheader against North Park University, with the first game set for 1 p.m. Saturday at Tucci Stadium. To learn more about IWU's flag football program, you can go online at iwusports.com/sports/women's flag football. And our next front page story is headlined, Voting Rights Measure Advances, House OKs Referendum on Minorities and Districts. This story is from Capital News, Illinois, datelined Springfield. Illinois voters could be asked to amend the state's redistricting law this fall after the House approved a constitutional amendment fearing federal protections for minority representation will be struck down. The House voted 74-38 along party lines to pass an amendment that creates a priority list of rules that state lawmakers would have to consider when drawing legislative maps that is aimed at ensuring minority representation in the legislature. The Senate has until May 3rd to vote to put this measure on the ballot in November. Constitutional amendments do not need the governor's signature. The amendment would establish a priority list stating what factors lawmakers should consider in the redistricting process. It states they should draw districts to be substantially equal in population to ensure that no citizen is denied an equal opportunity to participate in the political process and to elect representatives of his or her choice on account of race, to create, where practical, racial coalition or influence districts, to be contiguous, and to the extent practicable, to be compact. House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch, Democrat of Hillside, said he proposed the amendment in response to fears that the U.S. Supreme Court will strike down the provision of the Federal Voting Rights Act that bans splitting large minority groups into many districts to dilute their voting power. It is undeniable that the U.S. Supreme Court is poised to dismantle these protections, and when it does, some states will quickly undertake new gerrymandering schemes aimed at stripping away Black and Latino and other minority representation, Welch said. Welch's proposal nearly directly incorporates language in the federal law that prohibits denying political participation based on race. Representative Teresa Ma, Democrat of Chicago, the first Asian American lawmaker in state history, said she was first elected in part because of the state's conscious effort to draw a district that consolidated Chicago's Asian population into one district. Prior to our redistricting efforts in 2011, the Greater Chinatown community in my district was fragmented into four state House districts, three state Senate districts, three congressional districts, and five city wards, Ma said. Until then, an entire community's power was nearly non-existent and its voice unheard. Republicans argued the amendment is in response to a lawsuit they filed last year. They sought to overturn the state's legislative maps by alleging dozens of districts failed to meet a decades-old Illinois Supreme Court precedent that defined an appropriately compact map. The Illinois Supreme Court ultimately tossed that because it was filed too late. There is no need to change this constitution other than to promote further gerrymandering of the maps to where it's the elected officials picking who their votes are, who their voters are, and not the voters selecting their elected officials, Representative Dan Ugaste, Republican of Geneva, said. Republicans argued that Democrats are using the amendment to increase their majority in the General Assembly. There's many folks that were here who don't represent their hometowns, don't represent their family, don't represent their friends that they've known their entire lives, Representative Adam Nienberg, Republican of Dietrich, said. That's disenfranchisement. Excuse me. I have family that can't vote for me because they live a mile away. Representative Ryan Spain, Republican of Peoria, said he agrees with Welch that diversity is important, but that lawmakers should not neglect political diversity. He called it the embodiment of the corruption of absolute power. In 2021, supermajority Democrats locked in their advantage by approving favorable lines during redistricting. Governor J.B. Pritzker promised during his 2018 gubernatorial campaign that he would veto partisanly drawn maps, but sign them into law, arguing they aligned with the Voting Rights Act and would ensure Illinois' diversity is reflected in the halls of government. The amendment would keep the responsibility for drawing maps in the hands of the legislature. Republicans called on Democrats to adopt a constitutional amendment to create an independent redistricting commission. Meanwhile, the status of an amendment that would enact a 3% surcharge on income over $1 million was uncertain as of Thursday afternoon. Under Illinois' Constitution, all personal income is taxed at a flat rate, which means taxpayers of all incomes pay the same 4.95% rate. Under the proposed amendment, millionaires, including businesses, would pay an extra 3% on any income that surpasses $1 million. The amendment's future was also unclear in the Senate. Like the redistricting measure, it would go to voters and would not need the governor's signature. Voters rejected a broader amendment in 2020 to establish a graduated income tax structure in the state. The move was a heavy blow for Pritzker, who spent more than $50 million campaigning for the tax. This year, the governor has taken a hands-off approach, saying he still supports the concept, but that it was not a top priority. He's instead left it up to the legislature. Lawmakers have been reluctant to revisit the issue since the 2020 failure, but the idea picked up steam as the federal government has slashed funding to states and enacted tax policy changes that disproportionately benefit the wealthy. Millionaires' taxes have been on the books for years in California and New Jersey and were recently enacted in Massachusetts and Washington. Welch has been working to build support for the amendment since early this year And progressive lawmakers and powerful interest groups like the Illinois Federation of Teachers have lent their support. A study published by researchers at the Illinois Economic Policy Institute and the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign last month found that a 3% surcharge on income over $1 million would generate $3.8 billion in its first full year and $4.2 billion by 2030, revenue estimates that the researchers labeled as conservative. The nonpartisan Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability pegged the number at $2.1 billion annually, but cautioned that it could fluctuate greatly by year. And our last front page story is about transportation, headlined, IDOT Seeks Comments on U.S. 150 Plan. This story is Dateline Bloomington. Greg Roberts, who lives on the 600 block of Hannah Street in Bloomington, said he complained to the city a couple of years ago about the overall condition of the road, particularly where it bends to become Morrissey Drive. But because it is state-owned roadway as part of U.S. 150, he was advised to contact the Illinois Department of Transportation. And while the state did perform repairs at the Oakland Avenue intersection, Robert said he was told that additional repairs along U.S. 150 were about 5 years away. "I've been there for 25 years, and I've been hoping for repairs for a long time," Robert said. Therefore, he was relieved to attend an open house at the Bloomington Public Library Wednesday, where IDOT officials announced their plans to rehabilitate U.S. 150 from Oakland Avenue to Veterans Parkway. In addition to pavement rehabilitation and replacement, drainage improvements along Oakland Avenue, modernized traffic signals, and bicycle and pedestrian accommodations, are included in the contract. Attendees were invited to submit feedback on the proposal during the meeting. IDOT project engineer Ryan Carroll said the purpose of the project is to improve vehicular and pedestrian mobility through the corridor and improve roadway capacity and efficiency. "We are trying to accommodate all modes of transportation and working with the city of Bloomington to kind of help identify their needs as far as where they would like to see increased pedestrian access along the route," Carroll said. Stormwater work would be limited to Oakland Avenue between Clayton and Hannah Streets. However, the stretch of U.S. 150 between Oakland Avenue and Lincoln Street would receive new pavement. Sidewalks would be added to the west side of Hannah Street from Oakland to Croxton Avenues and on the east side of Hannah from Oakland to Bell Street. Where the roadway becomes Morrissey Drive, a multi-use path would be added on the west side from Croxton Avenue to Lincoln Street, and a sidewalk would then extend from Lincoln to Lafayette Streets. Another multi-use path would be included on the east side of Morrissey Drive from Lincoln to Angler's Lake. Carroll said he anticipates having the project out for bid in January 2028. All work would be consolidated into one contract. IDOT is planning to improve more than 7,100 miles of highway and 8.4 million square feet of bridge decking as part of the Rebuild Illinois capital plan over the next 6 years. A total of $33.2 billion is being invested into all modes of transportation. And for more information on upcoming IDOT projects, you can visit idot.illinois.gov. And we return now to some local and state news. Man admits aggravated battery, Dateline Bloomington. A man from Arlington Heights pleaded guilty to aggravated battery on Monday, the day on which his jury trial was set to begin on charges accusing him of traveling to meet a minor girl. Khalid M. Farah, 22, appeared before Judge Jason Chambers facing traveling to meet a minor, a Class 3 felony, two counts of indecent solicitation, one charged as a Class 3 felony and one charged as a Class 4 felony, solicitation to meet a child, a Class 4 felony, and grooming, a Class 4 felony, aggravated battery, a Class 3 felony. He was one of six men charged in an Illinois State Police sting operation in which law enforcement posted ads online posing as young women. Contacted on January 9, 2025, undercover officers posed as a girl who revealed she was 16, prosecutors said. Despite the age, Farah continued to make arrangements to meet with the girl for sexual contact and arrived at the agreed-upon hotel, prosecutors said. The aggravated battery charge, to which Farah pleaded guilty, was added because Farah put his hands on one of the undercover officers when they met, McLean County State's Attorney Erica Reynolds said. Under Farah's plea Monday, the prosecution, represented by Assistant State's Attorney David Rossi, dismissed the remaining five charges. Farah was represented by attorney Phil Finnegan, and the defendant is scheduled for a sentencing hearing 2:30 p.m. on June 24th. And this story is headlined, Ink Spot Makes Sectionals History, Dateline Normal. The Ink Spot, Normal Community High School's student news organization, recently earned the best sectional finish in school history at the Illinois High School Association Sectional Journalism Competition. The Ink Spot placed third in the team standings at the Saturday, April 11th event, qualifying to send 14 entries to the state competition. Normal Community scored 55 team points, finishing behind Washington with 66 points and Oswego East with 58. Five sectional champions led the record-setting performance, including Beatrix Alvarex, newspaper design, Brady Phelps, radio news, Andrew Naur, news writing, Anna Chang, copy editing, and the TV news team of Nico Salvati, Pranav Bukya, and Aurora Wolf. Wolf became a two-time sectional champion at the event, according to a news release. I am incredibly proud of the Ink Spotters. It is awesome to see their dedication to the craft of journalism pay off, said Brad Bovenkirk, Ink Spot advisor, in a news release. I am incredibly proud of the Ink Spotters. It is awesome to see their dedication to the craft of journalism pay off. Bovenkirk credits the students' adaptability and versatility as the team qualified for state in three yearbook events despite not being involved in the publication of Normal's yearbook, The Reverie. Naur and Alvarex also qualified in two events each. Naur earned second place in headline writing, and Alvarex took third for yearbook copywriting. The school competed in 13 of the 18 possible categories and earned medals in 12 of them. The Saturday sectional competition is a challenge, Bovenkirk said in the release. Traditionally, we struggle with our kids all being able to compete because of spring sports and schedules. I think we would have had a good shot at a sectional title had we had competitors in every event. The organization will now compete at the state competition against the top three finishers in each category from the state's seven sectionals. The competition is planned for Friday, April 24th at Heartland Community College. And Poco a Poco raises $1,675 for music. Dateline Streeter. Poco a Poco, an organization promoting music appreciation and education for youths, raised $1,675 at its fourth annual sampler fundraiser this month. The event was at the Park Church in Streeter. The organization thanked all of their patrons and members who made the event possible by donating their time, talents, and travel in a news release. Next year's sampler is set for 3 p.m. Saturday, April 10th, 2027 in Streeter, featuring mini concerts, visual art displays, and homemade desserts. Tickets are $100 and directly benefit Poco a Poco. The organization is currently preparing for its 10th annual Summer Music Fest and training programs, and you can visit pocoapoco.org for more information. And here is are some calendar of events items. Nourish and Flourish 2.0, 6 to 6:45 p.m. on Tuesdays from April 24th to May 12th at the Carl Health and Fitness Center on Trinity Lane in Bloomington. It's a six-week nutrition education program. Mamalogs, a storytelling event. 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. April 24th and 2 to 4 p.m. April 25th at Hope Church at 1 Yount Drive in Bloomington. $12, step into an intimate evening celebrating the profound journey of motherhood. Indie Bookstore Days, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. April 25th at Bob's Bay Books at North Main Street in Bloomington. Future Home Living with CO11. I'm not sure I'm saying that right. 10 to 11 a.m. on April 25th at 205 East Olive Street in Bloomington. Their presentation will focus on our first development, Maple Square, and their innovative conservation and wellness-focused home design. David Davis Mansion Spring Cleanup, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. April 25th at the Mansion at 1000 Monroe Drive in Bloomington. Grab a rake, a pair of gloves, and water, and meet us on the mansion lawn to help clean up the grounds and garden in time for spring. Pet Central Helps and PetSmart Adoption Event, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., April 25 and 26 at PetSmart on East Empire Street in Bloomington. Boy Scout Troop 122 Pork Chop Sale, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., April 25th at Johnson's True Value in Mount Pulaski. $7 sandwich, support the Scouts trip to the Ingersoll Summer Camp. Party for the Planet, Earth Day, and Art Sculpture Contest, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., April 25th at the Miller Park Zoo in Bloomington. All ages welcome. The Brass Band of Central Illinois presents Rhythm and Brass at 7 p.m., April 25th at the Illinois State University's Center for the Performing Arts on School Street in Normal. Free admission. The Steinway Reawakened, Historic 1880s Piano Returns to Life, 3 to 5 p.m., April 26th at the C.H. Moore Homestead DeWitt County Museum on East Woodlawn Street in Clinton. A remarkable piece of DeWitt County history will once again fill the C.H. Moore Homestead with music. Workers' Memorial Day, 6 to 6:45 a.m., April 28th at White Oak Park on Cottage Avenue in Bloomington. The Workers' Memorial Day commemorates fallen workers with an early morning ceremony. Family and Consumer Science Professionals of McLean County Meeting and Annual Spring Banquet, 6 p.m. April 28th at the Bloomington Country Club on Towanda Avenue. A musical entertainment will be provided. And NeuroFitness Pilates, 4 to 5 p.m., April 29th to June 17th at the Carl Health and Fitness Center on Trinity Lane in Bloomington. Casanova All-Stars, 5:30 to 8 p.m., April 30th at the Eastland Suites Hotel and Conference Center, trademarked by Wyndham on Eastland Drive in Bloomington. $35, the best of the best, back for the crown. Fifth Annual Excel and Beyond Figure Skating Competition, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., May 1 through 3, at Grossinger Motors Arena on Madison Street in Bloomington. Free to attend, event brings together over 325 skaters competing in 500-plus events. And May 1st Friday, at the bookstore on May 1st, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Bob's Bay Books on Main Street in Bloomington. First Friday, 4 to 8 p.m. May 1 at downtown Bloomington. Every month on the first Friday, experience art in over a dozen studios and galleries in downtown Bloomington. And Terry Smith, 7 p.m. on May 1st at the Beaumont Country Opry, $10 per person, doors open at 6 p.m. This has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, April 24th, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.